Paper 26, section 4, which is old single column, page 289. Okay, so if you remember from last time, we began getting into the Sapernafim, which are that highest order of angels that are functioning in the central universe, including the Isle of Paradise, primarily. We went through the tertiary Sapernafim first, because, as it turns out, those daughters of the circuit spirits were in existence before the secondary Sapernafim. So that's why they've did them in reverse order. And it also, you may notice, cleverly works so that the paper dedicated solely to the primary Sapernafim comes after the secondary. So we're going they have them in 3-2-1 order instead of 1-2-3. And with the secondary Sapernafim, remember, they'll mention that in a minute, but they're the daughters of the master spirits. And just the very fact that I just said daughters of circuit spirits and daughters of master spirits, you know, if you're on the ball, you should go, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. The master spirits, we don't call them she's, you know, we don't think of them as mother. And the circuit spirits are impersonal. We certainly wouldn't call them she's, they're more it's. So we have an it, it seems like we have an it and a he instead of she's producing daughters. I mentioned, remember, you have... You're still in that very central relationship between the infinite spirit, you know, the third source and center as the infinite spirit, not the conjoint actor, that relationship between the infinite spirit and the Paradise Trinity, that fundamental dynamic relationship that's initiating the phenomena within. You know, in contrast to the Father who's anchoring that which is without, you know, outside of the whole. And in that relationship, you have a mother nature that pervades the whole space of that initial generating relationship that gives rise to the master spirits, the circuit spirits. And finally, when you have the reflective mother spirits coming out of that core relationship. You know, now you actually have a phenomenon that's getting close enough to something that is, from a finite perspective, is recognizable as mother, that they actually will directly put the word mother in the name, especially when they're referring to the reflective mother spirits as the mothers of the Sapernafim, as daughters. But the easiest way to, without going into all the complexities, but the easiest way to just appreciate how there could be a mother for daughters amongst all of that is above and through it all, the infinite spirit is not just the infinite spirit, it's the infinite mother spirit. So there is that mother deity that is there, and you're seeing it expressed in... you know, in sort of indirect ways from our perspective. But nonetheless, when you get into the details, you can much more directly appreciate how you could have daughters from the master spirits and from the circuit spirits. Now, the primary Sapernafim, those are the direct offspring of the infinite spirit. And so there you go. Oh, well, technically, if I'm talking about... those daughters, that's the infinite mother spirit, see, obviously, that is the mother for those primary Sapernafim daughters. Okay, so keep in mind that there isn't any sort of disruption of the integrity of that idea of thinking of angels high and low as daughters of a mother. You just, when you get up to the really high levels, you know, you have to get into the intense details, which in general we don't, you know, go into here. A lot of it is that I was just alluding to is, you know, you don't even get into until you've unpacked all of total deity, and then you can unpack the pattern universe to get to that level of depth where you can appreciate that. So.
Well, all right. We're not going into detail.
We're not going to go into all that intense detail. I just want to set that stage.
In detail.
So that you know that if one wants to understand it more directly, one can. Okay. So the other little preface is, for those who are familiar, you know, this is much more immediately interesting to us than the tertiary Supernafem, because of how intimately, personally, one-on-one, the secondary Supernafem engage us as we're ascending through Havona. So that's, yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff, and like we teased, the oft-quoted passage about the integrity that we're trying to challenge us to is coming up here shortly. So why don't we just jump in and pick it apart here.
One of my prayers to my thought adjuster is to try and remember all this. So when I get to Havona,
Don't worry, there's texts, there's teachers, there's...
remember it hasn't stated it here.
Start off in kindergarten.
Right.
The secondary Supernafem. The secondary Supernafem are ministers to the seven planetary circuits of the central universe. Part are devoted to the service of the pilgrims of time, and one half of the entire order is assigned to the training of the paradise pilgrims of eternity. These paradise citizens, in their pilgrimage through the Havona circuits, are also attended by volunteers from the Mortal Finality Corps, an arrangement that has prevailed since the completion of the first finality group.
Just one little quick comment. You know, remember we saw them up front in this paper saying, well, we're not going to really tell you anything about the descending paradise citizens, and then they proceed to slip in clues all over the place because they really want you to take that next step and see if you can deduce the character of it, of them downstepping through the circuits, you know, relative to us ascending. You know, is this reciprocal parallel phenomenon? And so they, you know, they throw in all these little clues. You'll see that as we go forward.
According to their periodic assignment to the Ministry of the Ascending Pilgrims, secondary Supernafem work in the following seven groups. 1, Pilgrim Helpers. 2, Supremacy Guides. 3, Trinity Guides. 4, Sun Finders. 5, Father Guides. 6, Counselors and Advisors. 7, Complements of Rest. Uh-huh. Each of these working groups contains angels of seven creative types, and a pilgrim of space is always tutored by secondary Supernafem of origin in the master spirit who presides over that pilgrim's super universe of nativity. When you mortals of Urantia attain Havona, you will certainly be piloted by Supernafem, whose created natures, like your own evolved natures, are derived from the master spirit of Orvinton. And since your tutors spring from the master spirit of your own super universe, they are especially qualified to understand, comfort, and assist you in your efforts to attain paradise perfection.
Okay, so you see you have this, even though you have all this specificity of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different flavors, it's in the context of all of seven different fundamental types of secondary Supernafem, but in terms of these seven jobs, they're interchangeable. You have all seven types in each of the seven jobs, and all seven types also in each of the seven jobs for the descending pilgrims of eternity. You know, so those... So, you know, other than this bit of making sure that if you're from super universe number one, you get a Supernafem that's, you know, created by the master spirit number one, they're interchangeable through all this, you know, and they can serve as counselors and advisors for a while, then they can serve as pilgrim helpers, etc. So they're not created in these orders, you know, like we've seen with some of the beings. Okay, so these are job titles. And it again is reminding you of this adaptability, like we pointed out, you know, the fact that when you're dealing with beings that are really coming from the mother nature, hence a closeness to mind, you know, and mind has that fundamental potential of adaptability in it. You can immediately understand how these beings are. You shouldn't be surprised if you see them functioning in very adaptable ways, being able to handle lots of breadth, even depth of functioning. Okay. Now, just, you know, thought to ponder is, well, if they get assigned, if I'm coming up from super universe number 7, so I get a secondary supernafim made by master spirit number 7, what if I'm a paradise citizen and I'm coming down, you know, and I get my secondary supernafim on each, how are they assigned? You know, are you deemed to be destined for a particular super universe coming off the Isle of Paradise, perhaps?
Take it out of the hat,
probably. And see, so you can begin to speculate and wonder, you know, if right from the beginning, you know, as soon as the Paradise Citizen comes off onto the first circuit, maybe they have a track that they're already basically on, and a supernafim will be assigned. They don't go into exactly what those paradise citizens do once they achieve the full 7 circles. You know, other than, you know, alluding sort of indirectly that there's finality core service available to them and things like, you know, so it probably there's an assessment that's made, you know, and then they're assigned the appropriate supernafim. All right.
Well, one thing is interesting, you mentioned this several months ago, and that the parasite citizens, you know, they're created perfect.
Right.
We are evolving to that, because they couldn't do any more. They got to the point of where they created them all. Mm-hmm. So it's very possible that there's a type of paradise citizen that is analogous to the type of evolving citizens that are coming up out of the 7th super universe from, you know, way back when, when they were created.
Yeah, exactly. And you carefully look at what they say about paradise citizens, you know, you basically get that sense that they're only talking about the paradise citizens that really have a relationship to us like that. That in a sense, they're the reciprocal phenomenon to us. There's probably countless millions of other types of paradise citizens, you know, that aren't mentioned in here at all, even alluded to, that don't have anything in a sort of a parallel sense to us.
Yeah, no.
But they got
there the easy way. We're going to get there the hard way. So they got to, get a little bit of the tough stuff by coming back down here.
I mean, occasionally they mention some of the paradise citizens that aren't necessarily the ones that are going to go through this descending process. But they mention them because they have at least some indirect relationship to things that we'll be up to as finaliters or stuff like that. You know. So.
Yeah. Although it's not easy descending from paradise.
No, it's just as difficult. It's
time-space domain.
Right. It's just
horrible.
Right. You start in eternity with absolutely no relationship, you know, to experiential sequence, or even what we would call time. You know, eventually, you have only a relationship to existential sequence. Mind is absolute there, and you have to try to figure out how to come down, and so. Their first steps down on those first two circuits are really, really steep, just like we've talked about for us. You know, those last two circuits for us, we are really, you know, going vertical to try to get up from, you know, some sort of initial relationship with supremacy to be able to have a direct relationship with absoluteness to be a citizen of paradise. That's a steep climb on those two inner circuits. You know, so they're being helped not to go cascading down this steep stairway, you know, that they're coming down. Yeah,
be like moving from Boulder to Bangladesh.
Or so Boulderites, I guess. All right.
So, number 4. The pilgrims of time are transported past the dark gravity bodies of Avona to the outer planetary circuit by the transport personalities of the primary order of Sakonophim, of the primary order, operating from the headquarters of the Seven Super Universe. A majority, but not all, of the Seraphim of planetary and local universe who have been accredited for the Paradise Ascent will part with their mortal associates before the long flight to Havona, and will at once begin a long and an intense training for supernal assignment, expecting to achieve, as Seraphim, perfection of existence and supremacy of service. And this they do, hoping to rejoin the pilgrims of time, to be reckoned among those who forever follow the course of such mortals as have attained the Universal Father and have received assignment to the undisclosed service of the core of the finality.
Or even cores, in that case, in a sense, too. But, we won't try to, make clear all the details. If you remember, this issue that they're alluding to here is discussed further in a couple other places in the book. At the end of, what's that, paper 39, I believe it is, when they talk about the Seraphim a whole bunch. And then also at the end of, let's see, that would be paper 113, about the Guardians of Destiny. Okay, at the end of that one, they also talk about this issue. There's the paths for angels are many. You can see here, basically, we're not so much talking about any old evolutionary Seraphim, but just the ones that are serving as destiny guardians and following you upward through the local universe and then the super universe levels.
Your best buddy.
Yeah, in many ways, right? And but you have this complication that comes in when you leave your super universe headquarters.
Must be sad.
Where now, there's a number of different ways that this can happen, but no matter how it goes about, all evolutionary Seraphim and, of course, destiny guardians have to at some point go through the whole training and reformation in many ways on Seraphington, that world of the Father. So, but in terms of your destiny guardian pair, remember you got this pair that's following you up. Sometimes, not a lot of times, but sometimes that pair will actually go right into Havona with you. But many of them don't go right. First, they'll go to Seraphington. And then two different things can happen. Some of them will then come back and follow you through Havona. But some of them don't even go through Havona at all. And they meet you on Paradise. And even if they don't go through Havona and just meet you afterwards on Paradise, some of them still end up in the core of the mortal finality. Some don't, and a lot of them, aren't necessarily going to end up in the core of the finality. They might end up in another, or the mortal finality might be another one, or even other things like the seraphic core of completion. Or so there's all these different things that the angels can.
But they always
end
keep
up
in
with
touch
them.
With you. Remember this?
Right. They all, even yeah. Good point. And no matter what, they will always remain in close contact with you forever. Okay, because you had this very, very long association. Okay. So they're just invoking, that whole story that that Seraphim have, have ways of, especially the ones that end up in the mortal finality core, of really, when all is said and done, they have the kind of experiential nature that can acquire a non-adjuster father fragment. So they have a father fragment, just like you. And they have an experiential nature that is, in all relevant ways, equivalent, so that they can literally be in the core of the mortal finality as if they had been a mortal. Okay, they actually managed to have this indirect route of acquiring equivalent mortal-like experience. Okay. You know, remember we talked about this, you know, quickly when we were talking about the graduate guides and the Havona servitals and all you know, that whole issue, and the Paradise Companions, that you know, if you're never left without a close companion. You know, so remember we mentioned that there was this whole issue that maybe you know, they don't follow you through Havona, but you have companions through there. But you get to Paradise, and maybe there's going to be a short delay before they meet you on Paradise, so that you have a Paradise companion during that short period of time, so that you're never alone, and all those issues. Yeah, nice. Yeah. So,
better than here, right?
in the midst of all of this complexity, you know, we pointed out that the Infinite Spirit makes sure that. That issue is never slips through the cracks. Even with all the zillions of beings doing all kinds of different things, you're never forgotten, even for an instant. You're always loved. You know, and the Third Source and Center make sure that you have a companion at all times, so that you have that personal connectivity.
What would happen if you don't get along with your companion?
You notice they didn't talk about all this down at the lower levels, you know, where you're not so gettable alongable. Yes.
All right. The companion thing here.
All right.
The pilgrim lands on the receiving planet of Havona, the pilot world of the seventh circuit, with only one endowment of perfection. Perfection of purpose. The Universal Father has decreed, be you perfect, even as I am perfect. That is the astounding invitation command broadcast to the finite children of the worlds of space. The promulgation of that injunction has set all creation astir in the cooperative effort of the celestial beings to assist in bringing about the fulfillment and realization of that tremendous command of the first great source and center.
Okay, remember these three paragraphs, this one and the next two that we're going to read. These are very important paragraphs in understanding part of the big picture. You notice they're set off by large paragraph breaks, these three paragraphs here, where they're bringing in the culmination of the one side of your consecration. Like we've pointed out so many times, you have a dual consecration that you have to attempt. On the one side, you know, it's in response to that promulgation, be you perfect. On the one side, you're working on consecrating your will to the perfect will of God the Father. On the other side, you're working on consecrating your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. You know, many, many times in the book, we've pointed out there's two things, and there's an and between them because they're pointing to those two different consecrations. Well, here's the end point, really, of the one side. That whole bit about, you know, finally becoming a finaler because you're perfect. Well, part of that is actually done before you even enter Havona. It has to be done before you can enter Havona. You have to complete that consecration of will to the perfect will of God the Father. You have to have perfection of purpose, a perfect consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father. Then and only then, with that perfect consecration of will they even let you in the door. Otherwise, you're going to be a giant rock in a very placid pond.
Okay. Yeah, I keep working at it.
Okay. So you know, just think about, you know, this. When you're initially trying to understand your relationship with God and you get a hold of that idea of consecrating your will, it is my will that your will be done. Well, we're about to read about the story, what happens after you've, you know, finished that process. That's perfected. And you're going, well, I thought that's all I had to do was consecrate my will. No. The other part is what you're really going to now start to do in earnest. You can do it in a way that you could never do before because of that perfection of, of will, consecration. Okay, you're going to work on mastering yourself at levels that we can't even imagine right now. You know, like, remember they tell you, you don't even really in any real sense begin your spiritual ascent until you get to Havona. It's all preparatory. Even on Yuversa, that's spiritual preparatory school. It can now begin in earnest because what the kind of consecration of mind that you ultimately need to achieve here is what's built upon the spiritual foundation that you have when you get to Havona. Remember how we talked about that? You're out here, you have these two stages, these two three-step stages where you, first in Marantia, you establish a firm Marantia individuality, then you achieve a Marantia associativity, you know, the socialization on the constellation level, and then you reach the unity level in that Marantia form. Then you become a first stage spirit, and now you do it again. Individuality, associativity, unity. And now you've come into relationship with that one facet of the sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. And then it reciprocates. When you go from the outside to the inside of the central universe, everything is reciprocated. And what spirit used to be the ceiling you were striving for, it now becomes the floor that you stand on. And standing upon that firm spiritual floor, now you build a mindful self towards a very transcendent individuality. See, upon that spiritual floor, that consecration of your mind to the universal harmony, so that you can now do, once you've gotten the preparatory work in place, and are standing on the spiritual floor of Havona, that's what we're talking about. We're really going to get at that consecration of the mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. Because you know, when you become a finaliter, that whole God the Father seeking phase is done. And what does it say? You turn around and you go out at God the Mother revealing. You have to inquire that nature. You're going to start really doing it in earnest here in Havona and complete it on Paradise. And you will embody perfection of universal harmony that you can go out revealing. Okay. Revealing that universal harmony that is the actuality of God the Mother. The Father gave you the potentiality to embody that harmony. Now you're going to actually acquire the actuality that He potentialized. Okay, so perfection of purpose, consecration of the will, right?
So when, through and by the ministry of all the helper hosts of the universal scheme of survival, you are finally deposited in the bank of, on the receiving world of Havona, you arrive with only one sort of perfection, perfection of purpose. Your purpose has been thoroughly proved. Your faith has been tested. You are known to be disappointment proof. Oh, I'm a long ways from that. Not even the failure to discern the universal Father can shake the faith or seriously disturb the trust of an ascendant mortal who has passed through the experience that all must traverse in order to attain the perfect spheres of Havona. Wow. By the time you reach Havona, your sincerity has become sublime. Perfection of purpose and divinity of desire, with steadfastness of faith, have secured your entrance to the settled abodes of eternity. Your deliverance from the uncertainties of time is full and complete. And now must you come face to face with the problems of Havona and the immensities of Paradise, to meet which you have so long been in training in the experiential epics of time on the world schools of space.
So you see how that preparatory school element there, see? You now know, like they were just saying, that nothing is impossible, but you're face-to-face with something that's going to demand courage like you never imagined. The immensities, they purposely use that overwhelming size word, you know, the courage it's going to take to face the immensities that you have to achieve in front of you. Like we were saying, the steepness.
Yeah, I never thought Havona was having any problems.
Right, right. And we've talked about that so many times. Obviously, it's going to bring that out. Notice that word. You know, you talk about, you know, the speech of Havona, you know, is harmony. Harmony is the speech of Havona, or however they say that. And you're going, well, problem. How, if harmony is the speech, how could there be problems? But remember, you're done with problems that are mere actualities. Now you're going to face problems that are realities, real problems, problems that have to do very definitively with the absolute distinctness of John's personality with my personality. You know, no matter how different ourselves might be from here to Havona, there's a little bit of overlap, okay? And nothing compares to, you know, the level of contrast that we have to confront when we actually have the reality of ourselves, you know, able to fully manifest. Like we were saying, you have this spiritual foundation now that you're building on. And personality is spirit pattern. And so that should just, you know, remind you that you have, you now have a potential like you didn't have before, you know, to really bring that potential of personality into play. You've got this solid spiritual foundation. It's not so much this like building on sand like we have right now. I mean, we have this spirit pattern, this personality that's trying to actualize, but we just have this very faint relationship with spiritual energy. Yeah. Right. But when that gets really solid, so that the personality can really manifest, now you're coming face to face with, you know, some real definitive differential. And there are just endless problems of finding the way to harmonize such definitively real differences.
And we have totally different minds.
Right.
Totally different forms.
Right, right.
It's
right.
Like, you know.
Right. Not to mention Nassie. Yeah. You know, because, you know, you may have kind of gotten simpatico with everyone in your super universe, and then you meet someone from another super universe, and, you know, you now know what the word foreigner means, you know, or alien or whatever. I mean, they have no self relationship to you at all. They're just totally different as selves. Okay, so that's what they're referring to.
We have the three master spirits, so I think we'll be able to relate.
No, not the three master spirits. You have a
the Father, the Son, and the Spirit.
One.
Right, but it's very important to remember.
Number seven that right. We are coming from, so we'll be able to relate, I think, better to each one of those than they would.
Well, yes and no. Us. Yes and no. The reason there's a yes sense to what you're saying is the degree to which you can think of the seventh master spirit as embodying some of the selfhood of the Father, some of the selfhood of the Son, some of the selfhood of the Spirit, so that you have a little bit of each flavor of selfhood. You know, it's not all seven different combinations of selfhood, but like you're saying, you think, well, okay, that probably ought to help me to relate to the other selfhoods, okay? But don't forget, there's more to the master spirits than their selfhood. They also are absolutely unique personalities. There are seven different wills, for instance. Okay, and it's only master spirit number one whose will is a downstepped expression of the will of the Father, of the Universal Father. You're going to come in, for instance, very much attuned to the will of the seventh master spirit, which you'll discover, you know, even though you thought you had a lot of consecration, okay, to the perfect will of God the Father, It was just in the sense that we were just talking about, you know, of responding to the BU perfect element. There's more to it than that. And the will of the seventh master spirit is something distinct from the will of the Father. The will of the sixth master spirit is the will of the first master spirit, okay, that isn't, you know, so different. In its totality, maybe is a way to think of it. So, you know, I don't even know exactly what I'm talking about, obviously, see? I mean, I just know that this is a fact, that there are these distinct wills that are overruling each of the super universes, and this is painting me, quote unquote, you know, this is painting me with a certain color that I won't even appreciate until, actually, I graduate from the seventh circuit, as we're about to read. Then I'll start to really appreciate fully just, you know, what the difference is and where the Father really fits in to the picture. See, in a sense, I will, you know, because, you know, you say you enter Havona with perfection of purpose. It's like, well, why should I have to still find the Father then? When I'm on the third circuit of Havona, doesn't that demonstrate that I somehow have got myself fully consecrated? I've found him, you know. But no, you've just found that key to the door. There's more to it. Okay. All right. Let's see. Was that all? Let's see. I think that was. We were just. So let's get to it.
Faith has won for the ascendant pilgrim a perfection of purpose, which admits the children of time to the portals of eternity. Now must the pilgrim helpers begin the work of developing that perfection of understanding and that technique of comprehension, which are so indispensable to paradise perfection of personality. Ability to comprehend is the mortal passport to paradise, in italics. Willingness to believe is the key to Havona. The acceptance of sonship, cooperation with the indwelling adjuster, is the price of evolutionary survival.
That's a good paragraph.
Right. Okay, so I wanted to put those two together because it starts to build in that first one. Okay, so perfection of purpose, which admits the children of time to the portals of eternity. Now must the pilgrim helpers begin the work of developing that. See, now they're adding in some more things. Perfection of understanding. Well, that's a word about mind. And that technique of comprehension. That's a word about mind. Not about will. Remember, is that consecration of mind. See, it's coming in. These elements that are so indispensable to having a perfection of personality. Not just of purpose, but in order to have perfection of personality, there's a triunity that you're engaging. The threefold actuality, you know, that is encompassed by personality. You have to achieve that full-rounded perspective. Okay, and you're finally beginning that in earnest. Okay, then the other thing, that last whole paragraph. Okay, so ability to comprehend, again, I'm stressing that mind element. To comprehend is the moral passport to paradise, not will, consecration of mind. See, willingness to believe is the key to Havona, see, that consecration of will. Okay, and then they drop it all the way back. You know, what about that? The price of evolutionary survival element. The acceptance of sonship, cooperation with the indwelling adjuster, is the price of evolutionary survival. Now, how does that fit into the big picture that we now have our sights on, the immensities of paradise? Okay? How does that tie to that? What's beginning, you know, way back, you know, when you fuse, is now you're now, you know, coming up against the source of that. You know, when they say cooperation with the indwelling adjuster, they mean cooperative subordination. Cooperative subordination to the adjuster. So that whole bit of when they very purposely use the word cooperation because that ties into other passages in the book where they're speaking to the parallel here. Cooperation with the indwelling adjuster. In order for you to survive, in order for you to fuse, there has to be this cooperative subordination of yourself to the adjuster. Okay, and there's a pattern for that. You have the universal father, you know, on the one hand, right? But sometimes they call the universal father the paradise father. Why do they do that? Because they point out in a place, it's not just because that's where he lives, yeah, paradise. They point out in one place that technically when they call him the paradise father, they're reminding you that you have this infinite personality, the universal father, who if he chose could grab a hold of infinity, but then there would be nothing. There would be no us, no galaxies, no not. It would all just be bottled up inside of him, and he wouldn't even be God the Father anymore. He would be God the Infinite, and that's all there would be. It's God the Infinite. But he subordinates himself to the Paradise Trinity. There is a subordination that he has to choose. The Paradise Trinity is the only facet of deity that directly engages infinity. And it's not personal. It's non-personalizable deity. The Paradise Trinity is what directly engages infinity. Because if a person, like the Father, you know, he'd wrap it all up in God the Infinite. He has to subordinate himself to the Paradise Trinity. And in recognition of the fact that there is that cooperative subordination, he's called the Paradise Father. The Father that has subordinated himself to the Paradise Trinity. The Paradise Father. See, and it's a cooperative subordination, of course, because he has will.
He chose to do that.
He chose to do that. It's a cooperative subordination. It's the same thing with us. We have to bring ourselves into cooperative subordination with this impersonal fact, the thought adjuster, just like the Paradise Trinity is an impersonal fact. Okay? You have the will. So this has got to be cooperative, but it has to be subordination. Remember how it tells you that the adjuster is always subservient to your will. So if your will is not one of subordination, what are you going to be choosing, you know, to direct that subservient adjuster to do? To destroy your soul. You want it to build your soul, not tear it apart. It's always subservient to your will. If your will is, if your will isn't subordinate to its nature, then it's going to follow your instructions, and it's going to use its wrench that it has on your soul to loosen all of the fibers, not to tighten them, okay? Because that's your will.
Can you make an example of that?
It's it's just a matter of think about it this way. The remember how it tells you in the adjuster papers, the adjuster comes with a plan, a perfect plan for you.
Doesn't tell you,
it's there. And eventually you have to find that plan and subordinate yourself to that plan. And we talked about this, you know, just recently. Your first thought as an incessant clamoring self is, oh, so I have to just, you know, forget about what I want to do. Well, yes and no. What you have to do is find better things to want to do. You know, if your battle cry is merely self-assertion, you've just joined the Lucifer Rebellion. You know, if the way you see it is, it's all about me asserting myself.
Right, my way or the highway.
Right. No, the Father has a way. When you mature, you'll discover that His way is your way. It's the way that you want to choose. It's a much better way than anything you ever imagined from just a selfish perspective. So, see, it is my will that your will be done. Okay? You now see not just the better way, the best way. And you choose it wholeheartedly because it's obviously best for you. Oh, and coincidentally, it's the Father's way. It's almost like He's an infinite being and, you know, has infinite wisdom and all this sort of stuff that He can pick well. Of course He can pick well. He can pick the best way. And He has. And that best way will be filled with infinite opportunity to do everything you could ever imagine as an adult of God to do. An immature child of God is still confused in many ways. You don't want to aggrandize that. Be careful not to absolutize those initial desires of self. You know, say, you know, remember how they use the word desire in here? And you know, be careful about absolutizing those initial desires of self because they are almost wholly ignorant. They're not going to end up lining up with what's best for you.
But there's a balance.
Okay.
You know, God doesn't change your oil, so to speak.
All right.
In other words,
right.
You do have to sort of, you can't just sit there and say, oh, well, God's going to do it because I don't dare assert myself or I don't dare do anything. I think it's your choices that
yeah.
Really.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, what are we just talking about? You know, face to face with the problems of Ona and the immensities of paradise. I mean, God isn't going to spoon feed that stuff to you. You've got to figure that stuff out. It's your challenge to choose rightly in the midst of.
That's the fun, isn't it?
And by the like you're saying, by the time you get to this point, this is the coolest thing ever to you. I mean, you're just looking for an even steeper hill. I mean, it is so fun to face a challenge knowing that no matter how long it takes and no matter how hard it is, you'll get to the peak, you'll achieve that challenge. And then you'll be ready for the next one, you know, even more excited than you were before. But see, it's just this issue of, I mean, when you ask for an example, rather than trying to think of something to do, think of something to be humble, you know, and then figure out what God's doing and strike step with that. You know, don't say, what should I do? You should care less what you want to do, what you want to think.
That's what Judas said.
You want to figure out what God's up to, because that's where the fun is. And you never even think to look for what God's up to when you're not humble. You know, you're looking out in the world and you're thinking, boy, this world's a mess. I need to fix it. Because obviously, no one's doing anything. No, God is already doing everything. In your lack of humility, you can't see that something is already being done. That problem you see, it's already being worked on in an infinite number of ways. Can you see one of them at least and see if you can join hands with that one way that's helping that problem through the Father's way, evolution, to be solved? Because all problems, the only right way to solve any problem is the Father's way, and the Father's way is evolution, not fiat intervention by your divine brilliance. Okay? Never.
Those things do change suddenly.
Things do change suddenly, yes. But those are part of evolution, like they try to point out in the biologic evolution papers. Those are wholly natural, those suddenlies. They're not intervention. Okay? They're a part of the natural process. And so you're looking for, you know, from that humble point of view, you'll begin to see, wait a minute, there is actually action here. I didn't notice it because I wanted it to happen in my lifetime, as if my lifetime is somehow relevant to anything. No, not relevant to anything. Okay, and you know, can you see the faint flicker that only your faint flicker eyes can see and strike step with it? When you get up to this level, you can start to see some really big things. Your eyes are open now. You can strike step some very large processes. Okay. But to strike step with something very big is to come face to face with the problems of Avona and the immensities of paradise. I mean, okay, big problems are a big challenge. But all right. So they're invoking that that interesting relationship between the personality of the Father and the deity of the Paradise Trinity, which has a parallel. Your personality and the impersonal fragment of deity that is the adjuster, you know, and your cooperative subordination to that fragment.
Just speak to a minute about willingness to believe. Because, probably a lot of us sitting in here, we have a willingness to believe. You know, we really feel like that. Really have that willing. We want to believe. We have a willingness to do that. I think they're probably talking about a whole lot more here, but I was wondering if you could speak to that for a second.
Yep, definitely. The challenge there, that's that challenge to begin to distinguish between self and personality. What we call a willingness to believe right now is a desire to believe. Okay. The desire of our animal origin self.
That's where it starts?
That's where it starts. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're made hungry, craving in some way. The challenge is to take a hold of that and direct it to higher things. And as you begin to master that self and direct that hunger towards more important things to be hungry for than the latest iPhone or something, you'll begin to notice that there is, and it may not happen in this life, but you'll begin to notice that there is another element that's like desire that you hadn't noticed before because it's more subtle, but it's more profound. It has more quality than quantity to it, like your desire had a lot of quantity and often very crude quality, like we were just alluding, you have a desire to, eat out tonight or something. By willingness, they mean the will, that personality has, not the self has. So that's the challenge, is to take the word will up to the higher notch. And you notice they're taking it all the way up here. I mean, it's in the context of just telling you what kind of willingness we have here. It's perfection of purpose. Okay? What you're recognizing indirectly there is, in many ways, we don't even understand the first stage of what's being talked about being perfected here. We're thinking, okay, so I have to somehow take my desire to believe and take it all the way up to perfection. No, you're going to completely master that. That doesn't go up anywhere. That animal origin self's desire, no matter how high the motivations might be, you're trying to reach for the Father and not just have, belief in some random thing, but something worth believing in. But still, we hardly are able to believe in the reality of the Father yet. We were talking about entering Havona and going through a whole process where finally on the third circuit, we can actually figure out what it means to have a direct personal comprehension of the Father.
So maybe our faith has evolved that much?
Right. You've gotten to the point where, that's another way to look at what you're doing there, is you're now going to transcend the need for faith in your relationship to the Father. When you find the Father personally on that third circuit of Avona, you know, going to the aisle, you don't need faith in the Father anymore. You know the Father directly, personally. You're going to use faith for higher things now. Higher than the Father? Yes. There's lots and lots of things higher than finding the Father. You're a long ways from eternity when you find the Father. You've got a lot of climbing to eternity yet. Okay. Father's just the initiator. You just finally found the full-on initiation step. Now you can really go up. Okay. So, yeah, that's all those things here in play, the more you reflect on it. Yep, Ben?
Okay, but the part that I was asking about was when you were saying about the adjuster destroying you. That's what I was asking for.
Okay.
I didn't understand that. I've never heard of that.
The adjuster will destroy a part of your soul if you sin.
Okay, I understand that part.
Disloyalty to deity won't do it. That's just evil. But if you have deliberate disloyalty to deity, okay, you're using your will to have deliberate disloyalty to deity, and the adjuster is always subservient to your will. It will say, this Pam wants to be disloyal to deity. Well, to be disloyal to deity, you have to take some of the unity out of the soul. Because the fundamental quality of deity is unity. So you're directing your adjuster to de-unityize your soul a little bit, unravel it a little bit, so that it reflects your desire to be disloyal to unity, to be disloyal to deity. It will copy your willingness to be out of relationship with unity. And it will steadily, I mean, remember you start with an embryonic soul as a free gift. It has a measure of unity to it as a free gift. So, and everyone has that now post-Pentecost. So everyone has some unity that they've been given by grace, some relationship to deity they've been given by grace. You can choose to unravel that. So you don't have to have built up something now and then choose to unravel it. You're given something to unravel by grace now, if you so choose. You know, you can make that soul have less relationship to deity. Now, it's sin. It has to be sin. You know, it has to be, I definitively know that in this circumstance, this is bad. More than just an error. I mean, I know this is bad. This is an affront to the unity of the circumstance. This will shatter things. Shatter the subtle unity that's holding it together if I do that. And I want to do that. Okay? Deliberate disloyalty to deity. You know, and why, it's like, well, why would you want to do that? Because from your perspective, it's, you know, it helps you out. You know, if chaos reigns over there, you stand clear and, you know, okay? But that, you know, that's a delusional thought. You know, you can't stand clear. Unity is unity. It goes out. You'll be hit by it.
And you feel it, I think. Yeah. You feel it, yeah. I think. You sense it somehow.
I know now what he's talking about. Yeah. First, I didn't understand.
Right. Shall I go on?
Yep.
Okay, the Pilgrim Helpers. The first of the seven core of secondary supernaphim to be encountered are the Pilgrim Helpers, those beings of quick understanding and broad sympathy who welcome the much-traveled ascenders of space to the stabilized worlds and settled economy of the central universe. Settled economy. Simultaneously, these high ministers begin their work for the Paradise Pilgrims of Eternity, the first of whom arrived on the pilot world of the inner Havona circuit concomitantly with the landing of Grand Fonda on the pilot world of the outer circuit. Back in those far distant days, the Pilgrims from Paradise and the Pilgrims from of Time first met on the receiving world of circuit number 4.
Okay, there's a number of things in there. Let's just notice the little details there at the end. So We mentioned this. Grand Fondo lands on the Seventh Circuit. The first Paradise Pilgrim lands on the Pilot World of the First Circuit. And they start moving in, and they meet in this on the Central Circuit, you know, Circuit Number 4. So they're moving at similar speeds here, see, through the process. They meet on the Central Circuit.
Even though there's less planets on the...
Right. Now, remember how much... we said how steep and how difficult things are in those inner circuits, see? There's a quality quantity, you know, that's in, you know, in equal measure there. Okay, so when we get to the Fourth Circuit, you know, we'll touch on that again. So that's the process. Notice, see here again, they're mentioning the Pilgrims of Eternity, and they even tossed in one little breadcrumb for you. Remember, I told you one of the fun things to do when you unpack the central universe and the patterns there is to figure out appropriate names for the secondary supernafim serving on the seven circuits for the descending pilgrims. You know, what would they be called? Well, they just told you, and it should be pretty obvious, what you would call the secondary supernafim serving the paradise citizens on the first circuit. You call them pilgrim helpers. Okay? You call them the same thing. So you notice how they said that simultaneously these, you know, the pilgrim helpers, high ministers, begin their work for the paradise pilgrims of eternity. Okay, so they're called pilgrim helpers, you know, for the first circuit for both, you know, the seventh or literally the first circuit, you know, for the so they gave you the first name. Then you can just, all you have to, you just figure out is six more. Okay, so. So that's thrown in there. And then John, you know, mentioned it in passing. Here it is again. Remember, we saw this back when we were reading about Havona. They used that word economy. Okay, you know, what does it literally mean, etymologically?
The rules of the house.
Yeah, or the laws of the house, yes. Nomi, laws, eco, house. Okay, the laws of the house. There are settled laws in the house of Havona. There's no wiggle room. You have to figure out them right down to the last dot, you know, the last iota. You have to strike step with this very precise, you know, imagine how elaborate, laws of the house of Havona. You have to live in the, you know, in that house. It has a settled order that's been there forever. And, so there, we brought that up. That's part of the challenge when they said, where was that again? Face-to-face with the problems of Havona. That's one of the problems. It's economy. It's complexity. you know, you thought it was tricky, you know, getting into becoming a citizen of Uversa and following all the way things work there. You know, and then on top of it, that was just one world, Uversa. You go to Havona, and you've got the laws of the house are different on each of a billion worlds. And they're huge. And it's just a gigantic challenge that we can't even imagine.
But you can move faster.
All right, so that's what they're... They're reminding you of that, you know, that what we touched on with the messenger host of space. There is all of this form that you have to be comfortable with. And you are, like they said, you're completely comfortable with it at this point because, you know, in that form is your liberty. In the Father's form, your personality has full liberty to function. It's shackled outside of his form. You love his form. In his form is life. Okay, I'm alluding to a line there. What is it? Can someone think of it? We talk about laws. Law
is life itself.
Law is life itself. Not the rules of its conduct. See, you're not striking step with the rules of its conduct per se. See, you've gone beyond such simple things. You're really living now for the first time. You know, law is life itself. Only in the law is there liberty. Liberty in law. We know this. We're supposed to be consecrated ourselves as a country to that truth, that great truth that is now fully manifest here before us in Havana, liberty and law. Okay, so here it is. So we're on the Seventh Circuit. Got our pilgrim helper for the seventh from the seventh master spirit, and he's going to help us do what?
Circuit number one, though.
Yeah.
I vote for Fon Granda.
Yeah, I know you vote for Fon Granda. I know you do. Mr. Reciprocal. Yes.
Well, what's interesting is this concomitant thing.
Oh, you know? You're concomitant. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right.
It's concomitant. And we're, so for all the, I mean, I don't know how long it lasts, but for all the pilgrims of time coming in, there's paradise citizens moving their way. So Havana must get. You know, they're big because there must be a lot of people. Plus, that doesn't even mention the Havana natives.
Right, right. Which are of number beyond our numerical concept. Okay, right. Yeah.
Can't do anymore.
Right. Yeah. And but as long as you mention that, see, notice how there. You know, you can go into
cool,
you can go into all these words. All these words are carefully chosen. Why did they say concomitantly? Because they want to really stress that there is this together accompanying, you know, the literal meaning of that. The two of you are trying to come together as one in amazing ways, and you reach that at the, on the fourth circuit, when the two come together. Like I said, we'll point just how profound that is when we get to the fourth circuit. This concomitantly, together accompanying, together as one.
So these pilgrim helpers functioning on the seventh circle of Havana Worlds conduct their work for the ascending mortals in three major divisions. First, the supreme understanding of the Paradise Trinity. Second, the spiritual comprehension of the Father-Son partnership. And third, the intellectual recognition of the Infinite Spirit. Wow. Each of these phases of instruction is divided into seven branches of 12 minor divisions of 70 subsidiary groups. And each of these 70 subsidiary groupings of instruction is presented in 1,000 classifications. I didn't think it was going to be easy. More detailed instruction is provided on subsequent circles. But an outline of every paradise requirement is taught by the pilgrim helpers.
Okay. Now, all of that detail you can unpack when you unpack this central universe. You're not going to do it. It's a lot more complicated and subtle than it even appears on the surface. But to set the details aside. I mean, they don't want you, when you're first trying to engage this section, they don't want you to recognize all of those intense details. You know, why 12, why 70, all that sort of stuff. You know, why these three particular things, all that stuff. This paragraph is something that we call shock and awe. That's the initial point of this paragraph. Okay, they want to hit you, you know, right in the face with what, you know, what the problems of Havana and the immensities of paradise look like on first blush. As you dip your toe in the water, you know, you've got this. 3 times 7 times 12 times 70 times 1,000. I mean, you know, it's just gigantic.
Sounds easy in the first place.
Okay. It's literally just a shock and awe paragraph as an initial impact. Just to make sure it's clear to you, so that when you get to the next paragraph, it has some more meat to it. They want to try to make sure that the next paragraph doesn't become a platitude to you. And as many times as we kind of offhand point, I point to Chris and he starts, you know, quoting some of the lines from this next paragraph, you know, notice even we're having a little tendency there to kind of make it a cliche, make it a little bit flippant. They want to hit you, some shock and awe, and then try to wrap your mind around the beauty that's embodied in what they're just about to tell you. Just how grand you will be one day. that you can face that shock and awe without blinking. It'll be nothing to you, you know, ultimately.
This is only the seventh circle.
I can do it. And this is just seventh circle, of course, yes. Right. Now, don't even talk about the second circle, you know. Right. Okay, so.
That,
then, is the primary or elementary course, which confronts the faith-tested and much-traveled pilgrims of space. But long before reaching Havona, these ascended children of time have learned to feast upon uncertainty, to fatten upon disappointment, to enthuse over apparent defeat, to invigorate in the presence of difficulties, to exhibit indomitable courage in the face of immensity, and to exercise unconquerable faith when confronted with the challenge of the inexplicable. Long since, the battle cry of these pilgrims became, quote, in liaison with God, nothing, absolutely nothing, is impossible.
Okay, yes. Yeah, that classic sequence, you know, to appreciate that, you know, those with full power, those words will go through your mind when you're presented with that first textbook, you know, and it's a trillion pages long. okay. And you're cool with that.
Okay. I think I'll take this course next
time. Okay. You know, and the secondary supernatant that hands it to you says, you know, we're going to go gentle to start with. We're just going to do elementary school to start with. So there's only a trillion pages in the textbook. All right. That, so you can see what they're doing. Primary or elementary. You know, I mean, they make it even worse by throwing in primary. Like, you know, maybe primary school is just up through grade three or something, you know, right. Kindergarten. It's okay. All right.
Pre-K. Think about all those things that is listed off there. You know, the feasting on uncertainty. Fattening on disappointment, enthusiasm over a defeat, invigorating in difficulties, courage in face of immensity, unconquerable faith confronted with challenges. I mean, how often do we come up with those things in our daily lives as it is today?
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, it's...
And run like a rabbit.
I mean, it's hard to imagine, think about that.
It is.
That takes a lot.
But they won't, you know, they want to try to, you know, not, they don't want you to despair now, obviously. But if all you are, remember what I said, you know, quite a ways back here, several sections back in the previous paper, I said, okay, if you don't have a consecration to what Jesus told you to do, that fear not thing, if you aren't ready to take on the rugged truths of the cosmos, you need to stop reading right now. We passed that point of no return a few sections back. They're going to hit you with the rugged truths. You need to have courage, okay? And if you have courage, even when they do the shock and awe paragraph and then hit you with that long list, you should find strength in that, you know, not despair. If you're a person, see, I'm putting a challenge for you. Are you a person or just an animal? If you're a person, you will grab a hold of this. You will feel strength. You'll go, I want to be that person one day. Right? That's what it's about. Okay? To have that kind of personal response to the challenge. Because no matter what the issue is, even the lowliest thing here, you don't have the problems of Havona and the immensities of paradise, but you still have an inescapable sequence. If you want to progress in anything, it's an 8-step process. And it starts out with effort, then it goes to struggle, and then it goes to conflict. No matter what it is. Now, do you turn around there? Or do you keep going? The next step is faith. Effort, struggle, conflict, faith. Determination. We were just talking about love, loyalty, and then progress. Then and only then, progress. That progress that your spiritually motivated self desires, but is it ready for the challenge to achieve it, to actually have real progress and not delusional progress? Can it handle conflict by overcoming it with faith? Does it have faith, or does it just have belief? Does yourself just have belief, aggrandized belief that you call faith? Or does it have real faith? Then it can overcome conflict. Otherwise, it's going to shrink in face of it. Okay, and you know, we're talking about the desire thing, you know, and that willingness. Look at, you know, look at the illusions they use, the metaphors they use. Feast, fatten. See, like I said, I mean, it's not like, you know, see, many religious traditions have said, well, the first thing you want to do is deny all of the cravings of the animal origin self and somehow achieve some bliss state in, you know, in, separate from that. No, you need to take a hold of the lowliest of your cravings, master them, and direct them to something worthy. So that when you feast, it's feasting on uncertainty. When you fatten on disappointment, and not just on, you know, trans fats or something. Okay? Potato chips. Okay, they try to tell you this a lot, like with fear, is the idea, when Jesus says fear not, by that he doesn't mean somehow pretend that you aren't an animal origin being and that isn't founded on this zeroth level of meaning in fear. No, that's not what he means. He means master that animal origin self that's founded on fear. Take a hold of that fear. You become the master of that. Use that fear instinct as a focusing mechanism to bring your cosmic intuitions to a sharp, quick focus on an issue and penetrate it with insight. You're the master. See, you're the master of the cravings, you know, the desires. Anything else that... I just noticed the exhibit indomitable courage in the face of immensity. Like I said, you know, they just use the immensities of paradise. They're just trying to point out that's the really key ingredient to handling paradise. It's courage. Of all things, it's courage, indomitable courage. Get some more details here.
There is a definite requirement of the pilgrims of time on each of the Havona circles. And while every pilgrim continues under the tutelage of Supernovim, by nature, adapted to helping that particular type of ascendant creature, the course that must be mastered is fairly uniform for all ascenders who reach the central universe. This course of achievement is quantitative, qualitative, and experiential, intellectual, spiritual, and supreme.
Just to note in passing, come back and reflect on that parallelism there between those three. You know, the relationship of quantitative to intellectual, qualitative to spiritual, and experiential to supreme. Just a point of reflection they're throwing in. Just leave it at that. You know, and just, you know, see if you can build up a better sense of why those three words are parallel to each other.
Time is of little consequence on the Havona circles. In a limited manner, it enters into the possibilities of advancement, but achievement is the final and supreme test. The very moment your superaphic associate deems you to be competent to pass inward to the next circle, you will be taken before the 12 adjutants of the seventh circuit spirit. Here, you will be required to pass the tests of the circle determined by the super universe of your origin and by the system of your nativity. The divinity attainment of this circle takes place on the pilot world and consists in the spiritual recognition and realization of the master spirit of the ascending pilgrim super universe. Should I just finish this last one?
Let's see here. Why don't you read that last one, then we'll move.
When the work of the outer Havona circle is finished and the course presented is mastered, the pilgrim helpers take their subjects to the pilot world of the next circle and commit them to the care of the supremacy guides. The pilgrim helpers always tarry for a season to assist in making the transfer both pleasant and profitable.
Okay, so a couple things in that second to last paragraph. Notice that and you kind of go here you'll be required to pass the tests of the circle determined by the super universe of your origin. It's like, okay, so that makes sense. And the system of your nativity. Remember what's in play here. You have a billion unique worlds. Each one of those billion worlds is a pattern that goes out sevenfold and becomes seven systems, one in each of the seven super universes. Remember, there's a billion systems in each super universe, a billion local systems, 7 billion total. Each Havona world becomes a sevenfold expression of pattern out into the super universe. So a very important part of what you're striking step with in Havona is tied outward to the difference amongst the systems. So your particular system, you being from a particular system, fits into the billion set in a specific way. You're going to have a really tight, simpatico synchronization with one of those. But each one of those billion has a relationship to the others in a special way. See, and that's what they're testing. You come into a relationship with the billion worlds in a way that only beings from our local system and then the complementary ones in the other six super universes do. Someone from a neighboring local system has a different relationship into the billion worlds. All right, so you got a billion times a billion. See, I mean, it's just like the complexity. Okay.
What if the rebellion has anything to do with it?
Well, I mean, obviously that, there are things that about you that carry forward, like the Agendonter issue and that sort of stuff. But here we're talking about something that's transcendent of, those sort of issues, basically.
Yeah, I was just going to ask a question about our system being in rebellion, how that might play into this.
Yeah, basically just what I said. But, definitely don't think in terms of the particular Havona world that our system is tied to is designed to produce rebellion. It doesn't work that direction. That's one of the really amazing things to contemplate about personality and about pattern is how all of these things play out even when there's free will. You can have not only all of the positive consecration of will in our local system, but all of the negative consecration that's gone on. But they don't have to go, so that whole pattern of that particular Havona world that we were following, well, none of that works anymore. We've got to do plan B. No. It will be found when all is said and done that the pattern of that Havona world and all of the personality in play is just so. It's a lot like God the Supreme and the Supreme Mind, the Supreme Being, can adapt to any set of facts. Any set of beings can rebel or choose iniquity or not choose iniquity. It doesn't matter. there's adaptability plenty. You know, nothing, you know, the destiny remains unchanged. Everything can adapt to that.
By the time you get there, it's going to be a blip in time anyway, the rebellion.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, you'll be leaving it in the rearview mirror, you know, by the time you get to the constellation level, you know, in many ways, you know. Yeah, what seems to be huge now will be very small in the not too distant future. And then one other little thing in passing there. This is a key little sentence. You know how every creative mother spirit, you know, working as a mother, bestowing mind, encircling mind in us, has seven adjutants as a part of the mechanism for that bestowing of mind, at least to the lowest levels of individuality. Remember how we were, you know, we pointed out circuit spirits, they seem to be doing kind of a mother thing when they are the, you know, give rise to the daughters, the tertiary supernafem. You know, and look at the parallel again. They each of the circuit spirits has 12 adjutants. Creative mother spirits have 7 adjutants each. Each circuit spirit has 12 adjutants. And so, you know, you could, as you're unpacking the pattern universe, understanding how this all works, you can, oh, there must be a reciprocal, you know, thing going on. So you can figure out exactly what those, you know, besides being involved in things like this, you know, what more fundamentally are they up to in, you know, in Havona? You know, in their adjutant, you know, they're called adjutants. What are they helping the circuit spirits do that they can't do in and of themselves? Just like the 7 adjutants are helping the creative mother spirit do something she can't do directly herself, reach down like that. There's, I think there may be only the one other spot, if I remember right, where they refer to the 12 adjutants in the list and those lists in paper 30 when they list all the different personalities and stuff, and they mention 12 adjutants of the circuit spirits there, and just in passing in one of those lists. But it's a it's one of those little details that they slip in. But it's actually very important. They have to tell you that, or you can't figure out the central universe. It's a key ingredient in understanding how it all hangs together. All right. Well, let's do these supremacy guides. That'll be a great place, because then you get into the next triplet next time, where you're trying to find the three persons. So let's do the supremacy guides here.
Okay, supremacy guides. Ascenders of space are designated spiritual graduates when translated from the seventh to the sixth circle and are placed under the immediate supervision of the supremacy guides. These guides should not be confused with the graduate guides belonging to the higher personalities of the infinite spirit, who, with their servile associates, minister on all circuits of Havona to both ascending and descending pilgrims. The supremacy guides function only on the sixth circle of the central universe.
All right, you know, that shouldn't be any big problem, because, you know, we just read the previous paper. We just spent all that time talking about the graduate guides and the servitals and understanding that. But kind of notice they use it as a little opportunity to remind you that they minister as graduate guides and servitals to both ascending and descending pilgrims. The supremacy guides function only on the sixth circle. Oh, so they're kind of giving me some more clues about thinking about how these secondary supernafim, see, are functioning for the descending pilgrims indirectly. They told us we could use pilgrim guides interchangeably for both of them. But they say, you know, you need to think about this a little bit more. Don't think so interchangeably about what is happening with those ascending pilgrims on the second circle. It's not just the same thing that's happening to you on the sixth circle. Okay? That's what they're alluding to in between the lines there. And then the other thing, spiritual graduates. Remember when we were We pointed this out, reminded ourselves of this when we were going through Havona, talking about the central universe. You get to it again when you talk about finaliters in the last paper of this first part. So you graduate from your local universe, and you're a first stage spirit. You're a first stage spirit at the minor sector level. Then you're a second stage spirit at the major sector level. And then you're a third stage spirit at the super universe headquarters level. And you enter Havona as a third stage spirit. Once you graduate to the sixth circle, you're a four stage spirit, or they say also you're called a graduate spirit, spiritual graduates. Why? So here and there, you know, there when they call you graduate spirits, why are they sort of giving this additional name instead of just calling you a four-stage spirit? Why are they throwing it, or a graduate spirit? Why are they emphasizing that? What are you graduating from? It seems like it must be more than just graduating from the seventh circle to the sixth. What technically are you graduating? You're graduating from the spiritual womb of your master spirit. You're being birthed out of the spiritual womb. Your spiritual conception was when you fused. Two things coming together, just like the egg and the sperm cell. Okay? You know, that's your spiritual conception point. When you fuse, now you finally have spiritual birth. All this time, you've been in a spiritual womb, the spiritual womb of the seventh master spirit. You're birthed out of that. You've achieved a transcendence of a relationship merely to one of the master spirits. You've gotten on top of, you know, or from this picture of the being birthed, you're now outside of the womb of the master spirit. You can turn around for the first time and say, "Hello, seventh master spirit, let me shake your hand." You can't do that if you're inside. But once you're finally on the outside, you know, like when you're birthed out of the Mindel womb of the creative mother spirit, and you can finally turn around, especially now post-Pentecost, remember, you can recognize her very personally, and you can say, "Hello, Mom," for the first time, you know, as a person that you're outside of now, out of the womb of, finally. Okay? So that's what you're graduating from, the spiritual womb of the master spirit. So obviously, see, if you're going to somehow transcend your particular facet of the sevenfold individuation of spirit unity, you've gone up to a much higher level of unity now.
You're halfway, more than halfway there.
Yeah, you have a relationship now to all seven in a way you never had before.
But you never get to seven yet.
Mm. Well, that issue. But then you do the fifth and the sixth, and then you're heading towards the grand universe being settled in light and life to get to the seventh stage spirit. Yes, but and we'll talk about the fourth and or the fifth and sixth stages here as we go through. But okay, so that's what they're referring to there.
It is in this circle that the ascenders achieve a new realization of supreme divinity. Through their long careers in the evolutionary universes, the pilgrims of time have been experiencing a growing awareness of the reality of an almighty over-control of time and space creations.
Of the time-space creations.
Right. Here, on this Havona circuit, they come near to encountering the central universe source of time-space unity, the spiritual reality of God the Supreme.
Okay. There's a lot of complexity here. Let me just point out one thing here. Notice they use that kind of curious designation that they do occasionally in the book where they use capital D divinity, saying a realization of supreme capital D divinity like that. Another way you can say that is a realization of capital S supremacy. And there is another spot. Matter of fact, it's in the Central Universe paper, where they say this exact same thing, only they say realization of supremacy there, capital S. Let's not go into all the details, but let me just read that one paragraph that we read back in the Master Spirit paper that's referring to this, give you another little tack on what they're saying here. You don't have to turn to it, but if you're interested, it's in Paper 16, Section 3, the third to the last paragraph, on page 188 in the single column. It is Master Spirit number 7 who, in his multiple capacities, personally sponsors the progress of the ascension candidates from the worlds of time in their attempts to achieve comprehension of the undivided deity of supremacy. Such comprehension involves a grasp of the existential sovereignty of the Trinity of Supremacy, so coordinated with the concept of the growing experiential sovereignty of the Supreme Being, as to constitute the creature grasp of the unity of supremacy, capital S. Creature realization of these three factors equals Havona comprehension of Trinity reality and endows the pilgrims of time with the ability eventually to penetrate the Trinity, to discover the three infinite persons of deity. Okay, it's especially that last part that I just wanted to read it against. You see next he's about to say he doesn't really know how to even go about telling us about what's going on here. But the whole point, even though we can't understand the complexity, is the personality and spirit attributes of the Supreme Being stem from the Paradise Trinity. So in this complicated way, you're getting a relationship with the Trinity relative to the supreme level of deity functioning, capital S supremacy, functioning of deity on the supreme level. You're getting a relationship, see, a comprehension of the Trinity of Trinity reality that is eventually going to allow you, because when you get to paradise, you have the Father at the center, who's completely enshrouded by the Son, who's completely enshrouded by the Spirit, who's completely enshrouded by the functioning of the Paradise Trinity, the Trinity of Absoluteness in that case. I have to somehow penetrate the Trinity of Absoluteness to even get to the Spirit, let alone Son of the Father. Okay, and I have no hope of penetrating the Trinity of Absoluteness, the functioning of the Trinity on the absolute level, if I don't first get some relationship to the Trinity of Supremacy, the functioning of the Trinity on the supreme level. And then obviously there's a Trinity of Ultimacy who's going to have to come in there at some point. So that's what, in the next section, it's about the Trinity guides, who are going to help you penetrate the functioning of the Paradise Trinity to get to the third person. And you're setting the stage for them here with the supremacy guides, helping you have the potential that the next guys can help you to actualize to penetrate the Trinity, if you follow that. So that's what's going on. It's this long process, most of which is completely inscrutable to us, of trying to get the kind of self, not just the will to do this, but you have to actually have a self that can relate to these incredibly high, profound facts, that can strike step with them. Synchronize with them. Okay.
Well, I'm somewhat.
Yep.
At a loss to explain what Chris. You are. Explained.
Well, coincidentally, remember it's a. I think it's a perfecter of wisdom, isn't it? That's perfecter of wisdom is reading this. So you better be at a loss if a perfecter of wisdom is at a loss to understand what the heck we were just talking about. Yeah.
The whole personalized presence of supremacy is perceptible to the ascenders. In certain respects, new relationships with the seventh master spirit compensate this incontactability of the supreme being.
Or non-contactability is the case, maybe.
Non-contactability, right.
But regardless of our inability to grasp the technique, each ascending creature seems to undergo a transforming growth, a new integration of consciousness, a new spiritualization of purpose, a new sensitivity for divinity, which can hardly be satisfactorily explained without assuming the unrevealed activity of the Supreme Being. To those of us who have observed these mysterious transactions, it appears as if God the Supreme were affectionately bestowing upon his experiential creatures, up to the very limits of their experiential capacities, those enhancements of intellectual grasp, of spiritual insight, and of personality outreach, which they will so need in all their efforts at penetrating the divinity level of the Trinity of Supremacy to achieve the eternal and existential deities of paradise, which you just mentioned.
I see. So that's see what they're getting at. And notice, all that complicated verbiage, all of it in one way or another, is trying to get you to recognize that this is all about this consecration of mind, to have a level of harmony that is completely, obviously, beyond our comprehension. You know, it's so beyond our comprehension, he can't even figure out some way to even kind of hint at what you're really doing here in this consecration. Okay, but you will so need it. I mean, it's indispensable, this high level of mindful quality and quantity, for that matter. Remember that qualitative and experiential. That's what's going on here. Yep.
Let's line up nicely with the Holy Spirit threefold. Logical, human, moral discrimination, spiritual insight.
Yeah, bringing in, you know, those mindful issues there, like spiritual insight, right? And notice too, in passing, they basically alluded to that paragraph I just went back and read, you know, about the seventh master spirit. Remember, the seven master spirits, the seventh has the most immediate relationship with what's called the sevenfold spirit, that superadditive consequence of the relationship between the seven master spirits. And it's that sevenfold spirit that has a really close relationship to the Paradise Trinity. So this whole thing of trying to potentialize you in relationship to the Trinity is being done in this indirect way of having the seventh master spirit try to help you with this. When Pam was talking early on about, you know, we're from the seventh super universe. See, that's one of the things of the will, about the will of the seventh master spirit, that we're going to so know, so be in tune with, when we graduate out of this super universe, and you see how we so need this to really be able to even initiate this process. Well, it actually works all the way through to complete the process too. That's why no one from the seventh super universe ever fails in finding one of the three persons, because you have end up with this consecration to the will of the seventh master spirit that coincidentally gets you so in sync with what we're alluding to here that you can do that penetration process. Whereas someone from another super universe might fail in one of those efforts because it's harder for them to have this relationship to the whole, to the Trinity, like we can have. That's fundamentally the issue. That's why when they have to go, if they fail and they have to go out, they go to some other super universe to get a little bit more of the whole that they couldn't get in their super universe. They need a greater relationship to the whole. This distinction is vital, like we say at the beginning, that relationship to the whole. So there's all of these kind of, you know, this is another example, these paragraphs in the book that are quite dense about trying to think about the Supreme and about Havona. But, you know, you can work on slowly unpacking this stuff. And, when they talk about, maybe where I read before, that whole bit about what you're really striking step with here in many ways is an aspect of God the Supreme that you call the Supreme Spirit, technically. And that fact that's called the Supreme Spirit is reciprocally related out in the seven super universes to what we call the finite upholder, the universal mother, You know, the God, the Mother aspect of God the Supreme. You notice they mentioned about the God the Almighty aspect. Where was that? The of an Almighty over control of the time space creations there. That you are, the Mother is involved here in a lot of subtle ways. Because that's the individuality of the whole. Like we were just saying, you're trying to somehow have enough of a relationship to the whole. The Father just, he's the individuality of the parts. He made you this very definitive part. That part has to have enough relationship to the whole to actually, even achieve that first great goal that you're striving for, that personal comprehension in relationship with the Father on paradise. You need them. Again, this distinction is vital, that no two individuals are connected to each other except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. If you're going to have this personal linkage to the Father on paradise, that's through the Mother that happens in relationship to the whole, basically the Paradise Trinity, and through the individuality of the whole, the Mother. That's how the two of you are going to be linked. And that's what's going on here.
Another way to say affectionately. Mm-hmm. It kind of adds that Mother touch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
So the last paragraph is, when the supremacy guides deem their pupils ripe for advancement, they bring them before the Commission of 70, a mixed group serving as examiners on the pilot world of circuit number 6. After satisfying this commission as to their comprehension of the Supreme Being and of the Trinity of Supremacy, the pilgrims are certified for translation to the 5th circuit.
Okay. You can see how they always end with a transition to the next section. But all right, so we'll stop there for tonight. Noticed how there was just no way to really begin to have some inroad of understanding what all of this falderall is about that you're reading through here. If it boils down to nothing but, well, it's just me and the Father, isn't it? No. I mean, it's just, most fundamentally, the Father is just the initiator. He's the infinite upholder, but just that. He only upholds at the infinite level. The whole upholding at all the sub-infinite levels are done by co-infinite upholder, absolute upholder, co-absolute upholder, ultimate upholder, et cetera, all the way down to finite upholder. Okay? That's the Mother. I mean, that's the way, the Father's way is through that God of immanence. It obviously, his way can't be through the God of transcendence. The God of transcendence is on the outside. You can't be going through that. That's on the outside. The Father's on the outside. Deity on the inside is a phenomenon we call Mother, the God of immanence. And it is the means. The more you can come into relationship with the deity that we're immersed in, the more connectivity you have to everything. The more connectivity you have person to person, and the higher it goes, the more connectivity you actually have to not just spirit pattern, personality, but to energy pattern. When you start engaging the ultimate power and personality, that's post-power personality synthesis. You're starting to engage energy pattern and spirit pattern together in ways we can't even imagine, where your relationships to beings is also in the context of relationship to purposed energy, to power, in its pattern. Okay? Well, and at that point, the fact that you're adjuster is also pure energy, not just pure spirit, is going to start to come in really handy. Because you have just as much ability to relate to purposed energy as you do to purposed spirit. That adjuster gives this potential to go to begin to just think about what it's going to be like when there isn't such a distinction between the beings and the stars. You get the first hint of it here in Havona. When you're on these Havona worlds, you know, it's not just a bunch of beings, oh, and we happen to be standing on something, I guess. I mean, the planet and everything on the planet is involved in your relationship on those Havona worlds. It's this incredible whole package. And you'll begin to get the first taste of it there. I mean, that's one of the reasons why he says, I am at somewhat of a loss. I mean, you can't even begin to imagine what it'd be like to have a relationship with the people in this room if all the things in the room were intimate, just as intimate in the whole process. You know, as we saw tonight, a lot of times the things seem to be getting in the way of our personal connection. You know, power goes down and, you know, and whatnot. You know, you get to Havona, you know, that never happens. You know, and all those things are in many ways just as living as the beings. Like they tell you, you get to the Isle of Paradise and you look at the eternal sun and you look at the isle and you go, okay, so you're telling me one of them is living and one of them isn't, huh? I don't see it. You're telling me there's a difference in the substance that these two things are made out of? I'm not seeing it. Okay? At that level, you know, it's a difference in name only to anyone except, you know, an absolute being. So just to reflect on, and just, you know, how cool will that be, you know, to be on a world where, you know, all the things are like moving in harmony with your arm motions. You know, it's just this incredible symphony of everything that you're immersed in.
Maybe that's also why a chance meeting is like 1,000 years. I mean, you can really, you are who you are. You are, I get to know you by just seeing you, by just being in your presence.
Yeah.
It just exudes or whatever.
And everything around, you know, as you're trying to engage me on Havona, everything around me is, you know, the rocks are singing. See? Like the old passage, okay? I mean, the rocks will rise up and sing to help express me to you, and vice versa. That will be a really cool experience.
And the question is, are they yet rocks?
Yeah, and there, it's really cool matter up there. Yeah, but even Havona natives are material. It's just fancy material. They're material beings. All right. Let's take a moment to reflect on that.